Hello, and welcome to When They Popped. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Mary.
Mary, we got a banger of an episode. A few months ago, the Earth stopped on its axis, dare I say, when A-Teens announced they'd reunite in honor of their 25th anniversary. So it's only right that we pay tribute to these Swedish bubblegum legends, Marie, Emmett, Danny, and Sarah, who made our mothers gleeful when we suddenly knew all the words to ABBA songs. But before we tell a tale about these legends, let's disclaim that we do not own or claim to own the rights to the songs or epic performances in this episode. And the purpose of these beautiful clips is for commentary and critique. So I want to start out with a quote from Vice magazine, because I think that they summarized this story so beautifully. And they said, "Theirs is not a story of scandal and sordid rock and roll mayhem, but it is a tale of wholesome Scandinavian success and friendship." And if there's one thing we love to talk about, it's Swedish pop music. So let's talk about A-Teens and when they popped.
This group was literally my introduction to all the incredible songs of ABBA. Like, what a perfect excuse for our generation to be exposed to all the ABBA bops. I feel like, if anything, A-Teens needs to be recognized for making ABBA, like, cool with us.
Yeah, I totally thought that they wrote Mamma Mia, like, themselves.
Yes, yes.
Imagine my shock when I learned that the Broadway musical was not inspired by A-Teens. So Vice put this best, I feel like, in this 2021 article. If they were sort of investigating, like, where did A-Teens go? And I feel like 2021 was really like the resurgence of the Mamma Mia hype on TikTok, all those videos, the movies, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I feel like 2020, 2021, when we were in the depths of our panty depression, yeah, Mamma Mia was a haven for many of us.
Yes.
So maybe that was the inspiration behind this article, but I love how they described it. They said, "Many moons ago, before Meryl Streep danced around a Greek island in overalls, or Colin Firth traded his dignity for a spandex jumpsuit, a group of Swedish teenagers single-handedly resurrected ABBA's biggest hits." And even though that they began as an ABBA cover band, basically, they transcended into contemporary bubblegum pop legends. I want to talk about how they transcended, or, you know, as we call it, when they popped. So our story begins in 1998, a great year, no? Mm-hmm. Arguably one of the best years. Well, the genius behind A-Teens is Niklas Berg. He was the marketing manager at Stockholm Records, and he was on a mission to create a tribute group called ABBA-Teens. He said that they had this concept for bringing back the ABBA catalog. They already had tour dates because they wanted to tie it to the 25th anniversary of ABBA's huge Eurovision win. And he sort of like had to bribe a tour sponsor to make it happen. He talked a big game that they would be number one on the charts. Otherwise, they wouldn't have to pay for it. How serendipitous that A-Teens was created for ABBA's 25th anniversary, and now it's their 25th anniversary. Holy shit.
50 years in total. My goodness.
50 years of freaking bops. We love it. So speaking of formation, let's talk about how they selected the group. So according to Vice, can you tell we love this article? ABBA was never supposed to leave Sweden. Like, the intention for the group was to have them perform these ABBA hits at local amusement parks or festivals or venues around Sweden just during the summer of 1999. So it felt very much like it was meant to be this one celebration of ABBA's 25th anniversary. And you're probably wondering, like, oh, hello, hi, is ABBA aware of this? Well, according to Vice, yes, they were. Well, at least Bjorn from ABBA was. And he was cool with it. And one of the label guys said that he had, you know, a short meeting with him. He said, yeah, sounds good. No problem. And they agreed to it because the way that the label had sold it to them was that they would be ushering in this new generation of young kids, showcasing them the magic of ABBA in a new, cool way. And also, those teens will buy things. So let's take all those young and confused kids and shove music in their faces. Direct quote. More on this later. So this is how it's all being positioned, right? And if this experiment worked, Universal, who owned you know, everything. They owned ABBA. They owned ABBA teens. They would find, you know, other teenagers in other Scandinavian countries and basically launch their own versions of ABBA teens there. Like there'd be like a Norway ABBA teens, a Finland ABBA teens, and then maybe they do like an American one if all went well. Well, it sounds like they're franchising ABBA music to tweens, is it not? It's like Dairy Queen, but make it Dancing Queen.
I want to buy into this, whatever this franchise is.
So with the green light from ABBA, allegedly, and Universal, they are on a mission to go find their stars. And just like OG ABBA, they wanted two boys and two girls. So in 1998, we meet 14 and 15-year-old Marie, Sarah, Amit, and Danny. They're all students at a Stockholm dance school. So these kids did it all. Ballet, jazz, hip hop with a side of singing and acting, triple threats all around at the ripe age of tween. And Universal held auditions for ABBA teens and they just like jumped at the chance. It's also worth noting that this was one of the first times a group was casted by a record label. Like this is pre-American Idol. So all of the circumstances surrounding this were really unique. So these four little babies had known each other since they were 12. So yep. 2 years.
Or so for 2 years at this point.
But for them, they're like, oh, I've known them for most of my life because they're babies. But they kind of like were like a natural foursome and they just had like a natural connection. I feel like that really set them apart from some of the other kids who are auditioning. And Anders Johansson, who was the A&R manager at Stockholm Records, said that they were really trying to find kids with a singing background, but that people in Sweden have a problem where they always want to be comfortable. And in the recording industry, being comfortable is not a good thing. They needed to find someone who was willing to push themselves to their limits, feel a little, you know, out of their comfort zone, which I just thought was a very interesting, you know, cultural observation.
Yes. I want to be comfortable too.
Girl, my new thing is if I ain't comfortable, I ain't going.
No.
Or I'm not leaving. So their original idea was to cast kids who were only 10 or 11 years old. But apparently once they started to meet actual 10-year-olds, they're like, oh no, like you can't put a 10-year-old girl on tour. Like, thank you. And then when they met this foursome, they were like, oh yeah, this is so much better. They're like a little bit more mature.
So just like a lot of people that we've discussed on the pod, they were very, very young when they found fame. And I just can't get over like 11 years old. Who would even think that that was a good idea? Like, shame on you guys. Come on.
I mean, is 14 or 15 that much better? A little.
A little. A little, but not much.
No. And we'll talk about this later on, too, like them looking back in their career. I feel like of all the stories that we know of young child stars, ABBA teens turned A-teens is like the best example of how it could go right. Anyways, ABBA teens is underway. Amit, Sarah, Danny, Marie, they're casted, they're friends, they're so excited, but they are keeping this project sort of hush-hush. And Danny mentioned that when the group was first announced, their faces were on the newspaper. I guess they took like their passport photos or something, which I can't think of anything worse. Like, if you're going to put my photo in the newspaper and you take my freaking passport where I look like I just robbed a bank... like I'm in a lineup, like no thank you. So Danny saw their picture in the newspaper. They're in eighth grade, and when they came down to lunch, like every table had a copy, and they said it was very embarrassing. People were like, oh, we can't hang out with him, Danny's not cool. But that's the thing about Sweden, and maybe it's like that worldwide. If you're doing something that isn't really cool, you're a dork until you become very successful. Well, Danny, lucky for him, that would soon prove to be true. And why are tweens so awful to each other? Like, oh my God.
I feel like a lot of the child stars got made fun of by their, you know, classmates and their peers. I'm sure a lot of that is just jealousy. Let's be real.
I mean, can you imagine how jealous they were when in April 1999, we got our first single and it was Mamma Mia? So it comes out in Sweden first, obviously, and it stayed at number one for 8 consecutive weeks. Suck it, lunchroom bullies. So pretty much immediately, it becomes clear to everybody that this little franchise model wasn't going to work because everybody loved ABBA teens, and they were going to go far beyond the reaches of Sweden. Are they upside down, bouncing off the ceiling because they see the writing on the wall? Do you like what I did there?
I love it.
So now remember earlier, we said Bjorn from ABBA gave us the blessing to use ABBA in their name, right? Well, apparently the rest of ABBA was not in the loop and they were going to every media outlet basically being like WTAF. And this created a huge PR shitstorm, which only made ABBA teens even more famous. This is how PR crises work. Sometimes in your favor, sometimes not, but this was certainly in ABBA teens' favor. So after their first single, they changed their name from ABBA teens to A-teens. And I've seen a few reasons for this. The first reason is to avoid litigation. Mary, as a lawyer, please tell me if you agree.
I read that the name was technically not owned by ABBA, but it's owned by Universal or the label. So I would assume they wouldn't be sued by the label if the label's giving them permission. But if they weren't, then yeah.
So that's reason number one. No one wants to get sued. Number two is they believed that they had the momentum to release original songs and they didn't want to be tied exclusively to the ABBA catalog for the rest of their careers. So they have all this excitement behind them and they're like, our whole album of ABBA covers is coming out, but we're thinking long term here, right?
So smart,
agreed. As their PR manager, I would have recommended this same thing. So after this shitstorm, Mamma Mia was released internationally following their name change, and it topped the charts in over 10 countries. Finally, in August 1999, we get their debut album called The ABBA Generation, which, duh, it's entirely ABBA covers, but made for teen ears. So again, we have this sort of like weirdness where the album name is called ABBA Generation, like their old name, ABBA Teens. But even though their new name is A-Teens, literally nobody cared because this album just slapped so hard. That all white album cover art, it makes my heart pitter patter. So A-Teens was on the cusp of making it big time. Let's talk some stats. The album reached number one in Sweden and Argentina. In the US, the album peaked at 71 on the Billboard 200. It was certified gold. It sold more than 2 million copies worldwide and went gold or platinum in more than 22 countries.
Wow.
Crazy. I did hear also that their South American fans were especially rabid when they would come see them. Very passionate.
They show up. They do.
South America, come to Brazil, come to Argentina. You guys really show up for the people you love, and we respect that so much. And we're also a little intimidated by it. I'm not going to lie. So Amit noted that this whole recording process was really unique because they were only there to add their voices in. Like, they're not in the booth, you know, writing lyrics or changing things up. The only thing that was missing on the tracks, they were already fully produced. They just needed to add their voices to it. And Danny said it perfectly when he said that the ABBA songs were what they were. You don't want to interfere too much with the creative part of it because you're just like walking into the museum in Paris and being like, oh, Mona Lisa needs to be repainted. I think this needs a little mustache. I feel like that's a really great comparison because people go crazy when anyone covers anything and like it's either too much like the original or it's too different and they hate it and they ruined it.
It's a delicate dance and they danced it nicely.
Right. And I think because it was truly to a new generation, like none of us knew those songs and it fit in with the bubblegum pop scene at the time. We were imagining ourselves at like our little school dances, just moshing to it. It was just perfect timing. It was truly serendipitous. So the other singles from this album were Super Trooper, which peaked at number two. And Gimme, 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 A Man After Midnight, which peaked at number 10. But both songs charted worldwide. And then in March 2000, we got Dancing Queen. This was certified gold in the US. And I feel like this is when they popped, or like they were very much on the cusp of popping. And the band embarked on a promo tour in the US and they were the opening act for Britney Spears that summer.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.
So one of the members described this really exciting time, the summer of 2000, as, you know, all of a sudden everyone wanted us and they were traveling 300 days a year. Every day was planned for them and it happened so quickly. And they all remember coming to the States and everyone thought that 18s were the kids of ABBA.
That makes sense.
I would probably think the same thing if I knew who ABBA was. And as they pointed out, that a lot of kids didn't know who ABBA was. And, you know, they heard their songs. They thought that they were original songs, just like us. They had no idea that they were covers. So, of course, we have to read a review. David Hildebrand of Entertainment Weekly gave the album a B+, saying that they look and sound better than their supergroup heroes, even if the music is spruced up, thanks to a cast of savvy Swedish producers. If there's one thing we love, it's a savvy Swedish producer.
Yes. And one thing I don't love is trying to figure out how to pronounce a savvy Swedish producer's name. So I apologize in advance, but they're riding the success. This first debut album as a cover album did astronomically well, probably way better than the label ever could have imagined. And so what do we got to do? We got to keep riding that wave. We got to do another album. So what comes after ABBA covers? I mean, they're no longer the ABBA teens. They've kind of created their own pop identity as 18s. And Ola Håkansson, sorry, I do not mean to any disrespect. That's wrong, which it sounds certainly sounds wrong.
No, I think it sounds good.
Ola Håkansson, he is the founder of Stockholm Records. And he said that he really wanted the teens to make another ABBA album because there was still, they have such a big discography and there were so many songs that they hadn't even done yet. And the 18s said, nope, we want to do something else. We want to go more into pop music. And so he conceded. And obviously the pressure was on because, again, they had to strike while the iron was hot. And like pop was such a thing. Like we were in the midst of like the pop boom. This was the time. So Anders Johansson, who he does A&R for Stockholm's record, Kelsey spoke about him earlier. He mentioned the competition in this pop market. He says there was a lot of competition out there. So we needed to be quick. I was running around studios because I knew if they send that song to Nick Carter for the Backstreet Boys, he'll steal that one. Anders added, it was a really good time for pop. People call it a factory. Yes, there's a certain factory mode to it, but I think in a good way. So like the pop factory, especially in Sweden, they were just cranking out hits, but they knew that there were American acts that were big in this pop market that they were in competition with for music, for producers, you name it.
Okay, now this made me not want, but need a BSB Dancing Queen cover.
I feel like we can have AI create that for us. It has to be a thing, right?
Imagine if it was BSB covering 18s, covering ABBA.
My God, like the Twilight Zone. So 3 years later, in February of 2001, that is when we got 18's second studio album, Teen Spirit, which consists entirely of original tracks. No more ABBA covers. It debuted at number 2 on the Swedish charts. It peaked at number 13 on the European Albums Chart. In the United States, the album peaked at number 50 and was certified gold. Not too shabby, you know, for a group that just had done covers. While it did not repeat the same level of success as their first album, it went on to sell over 1.5 million copies. While I would say they received pretty good reviews from the critics for ABBA Generation, the critics were critiquing a bit more for this album. But as Taylor Swift taught us, the haters gonna hate, hate, hate. So let's critique the critics. Let's give it back to them a little bit. The publication Lot, never heard of you, Lot, but I've heard of the teens. They gave the album 2 out of 5 stars, and they criticized the music's similarities to recent hits by, oh, I don't know, NSYNC, the Backstreet Boys, and Britney Spears, but said at least the happy mood is still reminiscent of ABBA. And excuse me, I'm sorry, Lout magazine, but is it supposed to be negative that they sound like some of the best pop artists of our time or all time? Like, make it make sense.
I agree that they shouldn't be saying it as like a bad thing. However, I do feel like there is validity in that statement because especially in the song, That's What It's All About. Like, tell me that's not what AI would write if I said, Give me a Britney BSB mashup. That's what it's all about. It is so heavily influenced by them.
Oh my God, those like hard hitting beats. so Swedish, so of the time. And even the singer, her voice is like so Britney coded, Britney inspired. Oh, like, oh my gosh.
I also feel like this was finally the time for like the boys of the group to shine. Because like the male voices aren't like hugely spotlighted and all the ABBA songs, it's like very girl forward. So I think there's truth in that comparison. However, I don't appreciate the tone in which they were compared, you know?
Exactly. Like, yes, they're similar, but why is that a bad thing? Next review, J.R. Griffin of Rolling Stone. Okay, I've heard of that one. He said that without the nostalgic ABBA tunes on their side, the A-Teens have demoted themselves to the level of S Club 7, a younger Ace of Base, and God forbid, Aqua. He also added that the music would only appeal to very young listeners. And wow, how terrible of them to be compared to S Club 7 or Ace of Base. Like, that is a compliment to most, like, at least Ace of Base. I feel like a lot of artists were inspired by them. And yeah, they did appeal to very young listeners. And we all took our allowances and bought the CD or made our parents buy it for us. So smart, smart.
I know, the sacrilege of acting like S Club 7 or Aqua are bad. I wish that when someone was like, oh yeah, this is only made for really young listeners, like, I wish that they just brought in like actual youth then to review the album. Like, clearly this person is not the target demo. And I wish he would just like ask his kid or a niece or like even man on the street style at like a Dylan's candy bar to get some real feedback from the intended audience, because it's just so condescending.
Yeah, of course my dad wouldn't like this album, so we should probably talk to someone who actually would listen to this album. You're exactly right, Kelsey. I completely agree. The final negative review I want to touch on is from John Aspiri from AllMusic. He gave the album 1 out of 5 stars and wrote, instead of blatantly ripping off ABBA, they chose to imitate the trademark sound of ubiquitous Swedish pop super producer Max Martin. So basically, John's saying that A-Teens is ripping, you know, the Max Martin Swedish sound of the time. And maybe he's right. Like, I'm not going to disagree with that. But like, this just brings me to a greater question as to like, why didn't they work with their like next door neighbor, Max Martin? Like, why didn't he work with, you know, a hometown pop group? I find it baffling.
I know, it is weird. Maybe his schedule is just too crazy with Backstreet Boys, Britney, NSYNC, and like literally everybody else.
But still, the hometown gang. I need to know more about this.
I know, knows, like give us 15 minutes, you know, like even a Zoom call.
If he can work with Simple Plan for 2 songs on their fifth album, couldn't he work with some Swedish youths on their pop debut? I don't know. So this album, Teen Spirit, was preceded by the ever iconic, still in all our heads today, the first single, Upside Down. And this song came out in October of 2000. So it was the single before the album. And that really got us all excited when we heard that song for the first time.
That's an understatement.
Literally, I was like, what is this? This is amazing. It peaked at number 2 in Sweden. It was certified 2x platinum. It reached the top 10 in several countries. In the United States, we got a bit of a different version in that it was released with the alternate title, Bouncing Off the Ceiling, parentheses, Upside Down. I love a good parentheses mixed in. Like, no
so
more
mysterious.
Baby Amadou, right? Like, you know, we got to mix in some parentheses. The song peaked at 93 on the Billboard Hot 100 and also at number 10 in the United Kingdom. And that was their only top 10 hit in the UK. But what a song for it to be their only top 10 hit, because I get it. This is bubblegum pop dictionary definition to me. Like, it will just direct you to this song. The key change in the final chorus keeps me up at night. Like, I've seen Twitter threads about the key change in the final chorus. It changed my life. I would honestly critique this, not that my opinion matters, as like a near perfect pop song. I've talked about this before. 3 minutes and 30 seconds is the perfect song length. We get songs now that are like 1 minute and 56 seconds. Like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? How can you get a final pre-chorus bridge in 1 minute and 56 seconds when you can barely get a pre-chorus bridge in the first place? I'm nitpicking, but I would literally, not knowing anything except my ear as a consumer, dub this a near perfect pop song. You hear the Swedish heavy-hitting beats. My grades are down, they're
the signature of the time, the signature of Max Martin. It's just unmissable. It's such an earworm. You know this song, even if you don't know that you know this song. And, oh my God, what about the laugh before the final chorus? When she's like, let me tell you, when this would come on, when I was young, I would literally like lip sync that laugh and like pretend I was in my own version of the music video. I just loved lip syncing the laugh. It's a great laugh. How iconic is that?
In the beginning when it's like, up, down. And then you hear that like voice that's
on the side,
upside down. That song was just a birthday party anthem. It evokes blow up see-through furniture, roll on glitter, butterfly clips that actually moved, a colorful PB teen comforter, and Bath and Body Works sweet pea fragrance. Like that is what this song makes me feel like on the inside. Just like lime green and baby blue together. Something about it.
So
like bright orange and bright pink. I also love the lyrics. I don't think I fully understood what I was singing when I was little because there's one that's like, my teacher says to concentrate. So what? His name was Peter the Great. The kings and queens will have to wait because I don't have forever. LOL, Peter the Great. Like, we actually were learning history.
These lyrics are educational. They're pop perfection. A-Teens raised us. And we also had a music video for this song. And it was directed by a gentleman named Patrick Keeley. And it shows the A-Teens in an alternative world where everything is, you guessed it, upside down.
Oh, no way.
And we get this compelling story of one student who is in love with another student so much they can't focus on their school studies. This sounds like Boy Crazy Mary in middle school. Like, hello.
From like age 6 and on.
How did they know? But so they're living their lives upside down. They have an iconic dance routine in this, and it was choreographed by Wade Robison. So they pulled in the big guns.
To elaborate on this choreography a bit, like, it is so teeny bop, like Wade Robison coded. Oh my God, I was rewatching it. It almost made me misty-eyed because I was just so nostalgic for the choreo, the outfits, the time. It's really a time capsule blast from the past music video.
Speaking of upside down, was this not the inspiration for Stranger Things?
I mean, there's no other explanation.
There's no other explanation. Hello, Duffer Brothers. Do you wish to admit to anything?
And the Duffer Brothers have yet to respond, so take that as you will.
So I went back and rewatched some live performances of this song. I saw a few where they definitely lip-synced. And to be honest, I wasn't surprised because it's such a high song. Like, the notes are high. Like, I think it would be hard to sing and dance and do that live. But I found at least one where they did do it live. And they sang along with the backing track, which I'm totally fine with that. I just like when you sing. And I was like blown away by how good the girl, like, I mean, they all were, except like, you know, the girls in this song especially are carrying the chorus with those high notes. I was very impressed. So we got two other singles from this album. We got Halfway Around the World. It peaked at number 7 in Sweden and earned a gold certification. What did you think of this one, Kels?
I love this song. It is like pop perfection. But I will admit, this one I had to listen to like rejigger my memory. It doesn't stick with me as much as some of the others on the album.
Same. I had to revisit to remember it. And then I remembered it. But Sugar Rush, the other single, is one that I definitely remember. Fight it, That one peaked at number 15 in Sweden, number 72 in Germany. It was actually, at the time, the lowest chart positions for the A-Teens in both countries. Fun fact, Dream Street also recorded a version of Sugar Rush and also released it on their debut album. Is it for real or maybe I'm losing touch? You are my sugar rush. I feel like I've heard the Dream Street version, but not... Now I've heard the A-Teens, but I didn't remember the A-Teens version. I just remember like Chris Trousdale's like high voice from Sugar Rush.
You are my Sugar Rush. Oh my God, his sweet voice.
Yes. And neither of these singles obviously had the level of success Bouncing Off the Ceiling did, but I definitely would hear Sugar Rush on Radio Disney all the time.
Oh, 100%. This was like the slow dance version of I Want Candy. Or Candy by Mandy Moore. I'm missing you like candy, yeah. You like candy. It's like the marketing teams at these labels were like, okay, like focus groups show that like kids like candy. So like all of our songs must be about candy. Like literally, metaphorically, like candy is the thing. And my God, it worked.
It honestly would still work for me today as well. I was just texting my friend about sour gummy.
Have you tried Bon Bon, the Swedish candy company?
No.
Speaking of Swedish, this candy company has gone totally viral on TikTok. It's the best sour candy I've ever had in my
life. Oh my God. Bring some to Mexico.
Oh my God, I so will.
So, I mean, regardless of how you look at it, this album was a success. A-Teens went on a 43-date tour with Aaron Carter in the United States, and then they later toured with No Angels in Germany. They performed on the Radio Disney Live 2001 World Tour. Oh my God, I'm sure that had an iconic lineup. And the same year, Coca-Cola signed them to become the face of the brand in Thailand, which I just like find that so interesting. Like, I wonder if they just had crazy numbers in Thailand or something. Like,
right. Like, you are no one unless you are the face of some soda in
Thailand.
Right,
in Thailand. In December 2001, the A-Teens released Heartbreak Lullaby, which was written by Kathy Dennis, and it was for the European soundtrack of The Princess Diaries. Who knew there was a whole separate soundtrack for The Princess Diaries? And I'm like shook because I know only the elite artists and songs made The Princess Diaries soundtrack. Okay. So like we need to investigate whatever was on the European version because they had to be bangers.
I know. Like was the movie actually different? Like the music in the movie?
Or maybe it was just like an extra bonus track or something. I can't imagine they would like.
Oh, it makes you different.
Yeah, I could never take that.
That's
out.
Us to the European soundtrack version.
Yes. Like what? It makes you
makes
beautiful.
You beautiful. Heartbreak Lullaby makes you beautiful.
So yeah, what was next?
All right. After this, in 2002, we get their third album, Pop Till You Drop. Can you think of a better name?
That's us. Pop that Till We Drop.
Truly us. So before the album came out, we got a single, Can't Help Falling in Love, a cover of the Elvis Presley song. Take my hand, take my whole life. We all know it. We all love it. And this is like a fun little nod to their roots as, you know, a cover band, covers. I feel like. Mm-hmm. So some of you probably remember this song was also featured on the soundtrack of Disney's Lilo and Stitch. Let's talk about Lilo and Stitch. I feel like that movie was just like a cultural reset. I also love that they had actual Elvis songs and then the more modern interpretation by A-Teens. It's like a perfect example of honoring the original while embracing those new formats to get audiences engaged.
And Stitch looks so much like my pug. I love Stitch so much.
Oh my God. I had a little Frenchie. His name was Henry. He was the love of my life. And everyone would tell me he looked like Stitch.
I love it. With their teethy sticking out and their
he
ears.
Sounded like him. He breathed like him. He destroyed things like him.
I love that movie.
Oh my God. I need to watch it tonight. I love it so much. So anyways, later that summer, we get our next single. It's called Floor Filler. This was the second and also the final single from the album. Like, what? We only got two? But this song is very much one of those like teen anthems. For this one, they worked with Grizzly, who worked with them on several other songs for Teen Spirit. And there are some parts of this that remind me of Shania Twain that don't impress me much. That don't impress me much. You just have to listen to it And hopefully I'm not insane. But what I really love about this song is the music video. It's insane. It's a bunch of like perfectly Y2K dressed teens in a nightclub. It was filmed at the Loft in LA. And the music video was directed by Charles Klapow, who choreographed High School Musical. If there's one thing Charles knows how to do, it's how to make teens dance and make us all want to be them. So some other notable songs from this album I wanted to talk about are Let Your Heart Do All the Talking. This one is really giving me Aqua Barbie Girl vibes. There's like a low, gruff call and answer with the guys where they're like, come on, Barbie, let's go party. Like, very much that vibe. And they also have a very notable duet, a cover of Schools Out with the Alice Cooper, who traveled to Sweden and spent 4 days in studio with A-Teens. So Danny told this story. He was like, I still can't get my head around it. He's a legend. He was telling us all these stories about when he was supposed to put a fake sword through his leg, but he actually did it and cut himself. Like, oh my God, like what is going on in that studio?
Oh my God. And just like such a random, like you could have told me Aaron Carter. You could have told me 98 Degrees. You could have told me literally anybody besides Alice Cooper. And that would have like not surprised me. But this was quite a surprising
union.
Collab,
union, duet, whatever you want to call it. It was freaking iconic. The next song I want to touch on is called This Year. Because it was in the Kim Possible soundtrack. I didn't even know Kim Possible had a soundtrack. That makes me a bad pop culture stan of the early 2000s, I guess.
I listened to the theme song by Christina Milian on repeat. It's like a minute and 30 seconds long, but...
If that was your ringtone, then you were just on another level, and I liked you immediately.
Beep, 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 beep.
So moving on to the next song, Slam! This includes writing credits by Marie, Sarah, and Danny, and it's basically the Swedish pop version of the Hoedown Throwdown. So I'd like you all to pause this podcast right now and go listen to it and tell us what you think. So that summer, they went on the Pop Till You Drop tour, which was their first headlining tour in the U.S. That's kind of crazy.
It's a little weird. I agree. I also noticed they worked with Red One on this album, and he is a very known Max Martin collaborator, Max Martin adjacent. All roads lead to Max, and I'm still obviously losing sleep over why there wasn't a Max Martin connection here.
Oh, that is so a Red One. A Red One. That is so weird. All right. So the next year, they put out kind of like a recycled version of Pop Till You Drop for the international market. And this album was called New Arrival. And it had 6 songs from Pop Till You Drop. And this would become their final studio album. Womp, womp. It debuted at number 4 in Sweden. It was certified gold a few weeks after its release. But the sales were just not it. The record sold fewer than 350,000 copies worldwide. And it's just kind of disappointing. But all the while, they're touring the world. And this is where we want to touch on their experiences being these like overnight teen sensations. The band has been super vocal about how grateful they were that they were so sheltered during this period. They still had braces, they had school, and they were still taking tests. And it was just so different than so many of the other pop stars of the time. When he was talking to MTV, Amit said, "We didn't have a lot of exposure to sex, drugs, and rock and roll. We were quite contained and protected. One could say that's boring, but I'm very grateful for it today. There were a couple of other Swedish acts, I don't want to mention any names, that were signed to other labels, and they were ground into dust. There was nothing left of them when they came out of it. So Anders, the group's manager, said that they saw that with a lot of people that they toured with. He specifically called out Nick Carter, Aaron Carter, and Beyonce after the breakup of Destiny's Child. And he said, Britney, of course, you know, we did a bunch of tours with her. And the way that they worked these young artists was insane. It sounds like they were on tour together, but they didn't really get to spend much quality time together or connect outside of their performances, which everything we know about Britney, that tracks, sadly. So it's really great to hear that they had trustworthy and involved family members and teams around them. It's literally devastating, these examples that they drop, but it's not surprising. You know, it's a rat race to the top. And then once you make it, I feel like it's almost worse because then you're living with this fear of becoming irrelevant. I feel like we saw some of that with Nick Carter in his VH1 show, I Heart Nick Carter. It was so clear that he was struggling with being, to use his own words, a C-list celebrity after being on top of the world for so many years. And, you know, Justin Bieber is another example that comes to mind. They say, you know, fame is a powerful drug and most adults can't handle it. I can't imagine what that does to a half-formed frontal lobe.
And what's the theory? They say that you're kind of frozen at the age that you become a celebrity, like your maturity level, you never really get past where the age you were when you became like a superstar. So it would, I mean, I'm sure that's not a one size fits all situation, but it certainly would track in some of the sadder situations we've seen.
Absolutely. But it sounds like these guys just had such a strong foundation. Obviously, credit where it's due. They deserve a lot of credit for that. But the parents, the managers, the people who are around them for not letting them become exploited. I mean, good on them. Danny also shared a happier story about Britney. He said one time him, Marie, and Sarah had a day off in 2003. They were just walking around and, you know, far away, they saw a huge group of people shouting and taking pictures. And they went into a store. And a couple minutes later, these two big guys came inside, bodyguards. They turned and it was Britney Spears. And she saw them and she was like, 18? And they were like, Britney fucking recognizes us. This is amazing. Mary, obviously, I need to know your reaction to this.
Of course, Britney remembers who they were because that's who she is as a person. And I love their reaction because I would have done that, except I probably would have like passed out. That's a story I've never heard before about Britney. So I love hearing those. They did have their last album, New Arrival, but they left us with their final album that wasn't really a new album. In 2004, it was their greatest hits album. There were three new songs on it, but the rest were, you know, repeats as it would be on a greatest hits album. There wasn't much buzz around this album. And then after that, they quietly went into hiatus. They didn't address it, though. And it wasn't until 2006 that the official announcement came out that 18s had broken up. And Danny commented that after the greatest hits album, they were all kind of like, isn't it time to move on? Maybe we've had such beautiful success. Are we really going to be the band that just forces things out? And Amit also commented that their relationships weren't really growing within the group. They missed all those years, like being kids together, being friends, playing in the basement, climbing trees. And like everyone was so young and it just had different goals and ideas for their future, which makes sense when you're kind of in this manufactured group, you're put together. Even though if you were friends originally, as you grow up, you're going to have different interests. And we see that with other groups. We see that with Fifth Harmony or NSYNC, even, you know, Backstreet Boys. Kevin went and took a break for way too many years. Like, that's bound to happen. And Sarah said that, you know, the band was still doing well and the label didn't want them to stop. And she even said, I don't think our parents really wanted us to stop either. And the 18s as teenagers were the ones who said, we do not want to do this anymore. And Sarah said that didn't come from anyone except us. We were the ones who sat down and said, we can't lie anymore. We can't pretend that we're having a great time. And they said, you know, slowly the magazines, the press, they're going to realize that we're not the same crazy, fun, happy teenagers that we were 3 years ago. And that's when these children, you know, decided that they wouldn't go on as a group. And I just think that's really interesting and powerful. Amit humorously described it as a passive, aggressive, silent breakup. And he said it's very Swedish. It's a conflict avoiding way of dealing with things, you know, just not addressing it. And I honestly love that approach. Actually, I'm kidding.
That's so waspy.
I love communication. I'm actually completely lying. And their manager, Anders Johansson, that we've talked about many times, he just also noted by the third album that the music was also changing. Just like Max Martin said, like Pharrell happened, and that was a totally different vibe of music. Anders also mentioned Justin Timberlake, Pharrell, and Timbaland, and said the sounds were so different. As in every big trend, it's pretty clear once it passes the expiration date. So that sound was kind of in the past by that time. And Danny said there wasn't ever a fight. In that way, 18s must have been the most boring band ever. People really wanted to angle it like, oh yeah, they're splitting up, they're arguing. And we're like, no, it's fine. We're calling it quits and we're taking a break. And as Sarah put it, we were four kids that had grown apart within 6 years. We started off being best friends, but there wasn't really any time for us to be creative. We were a product. We performed. We interviewed. We did what we needed to do to get CDs and tours sold and booked. That's it. I think it's very impressive that they had the wherewithal to say, no, we're done.
Yeah. And quit while they were ahead before they started like resenting each other or anything.
Exactly. And she talked about the rumors and the magazines and the reason for the split. There had to be some drama, but they made it very clear in this MTV interview that there was no like intermember dating. So, like there was no love triangle, no drama, like no bad breakup with that split up the group or anything. And they described their relationships as brothers and sisters, like through and through.
No Fleetwood Mac-esque drama.
No Spice Girls drama.
It would be fun if there was a little salacious rumors. I don't know.
Maybe there is, and they're just not telling us. So they went off the grid. They really went off the grid. But they did do an interview in 2021 and were asked about if they would ever reunite. Again, it's 2021. That's when we're all in COVID. We're like miserable. You know, nostalgia was really kicked into full throttle, I think, during COVID. And when asked about it, Sarah said, I love the thought of reuniting. I would say yes. If someone gave me a phone call and said, hey, want to do a reunion tour? I'd be like, fuck yeah. And I'm like, fuck yeah, Sarah. I love that energy. Sounds like they had a good break and they're ready to get back at it. I love that. Danny said, you know, he was a little less excited compared to Sarah, but he said if it was for a good cause, he would do it in a heartbeat. And Amit agreed. He said if it's for a charity, he'd be there in a minute. But so that was in 2021. So where are they now? What have they been up to? Well, Marie and Sarah have worked on and been on multiple TV shows, including Sweden's The X Factor. Sarah has a podcast. Sarah, come on the pod. Let's collab. And Marie is a competitive pole dancer. Like what? That's a thing?
Yeah. And they have like the best bods ever.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh my
so
God.
So much upper body strength.
Like I can't even pull myself on the pole to begin with. But
no, like if I ever need to be publicly embarrassed, make me do a pull up in front of other people. Yeah, and I'll shut up real quick.
Danny kind of stayed in music. He actually had a solo album come out in 2004 called Girl Talk. And then he eventually moved to LA and focused on writing and producing. He worked with Red One, Lupe Fiasco, and Avicii. And then finally, Amit went to college and is now working in his family business in energy tech. Like, okay, cool.
Like, imagine that icebreaker at work. Like, I wonder if his, like, LinkedIn lists 18s.
I mean, how could it not?
It has to.
So what's going on with them now? Well, in January 2024, rumors were a-swirling that the group had met up in Stockholm in preparation for an upcoming celebration of ABBA Generation's 25th anniversary. And the speculation first kind of popped up when fans noticed that 18's dormant social media accounts were reactivated unexpectedly. And eventually, the news was confirmed, and just this month, on February 3rd, 2004, the foursome officially reunited with a performance at this Swedish music competition called Melodifestivalen 2024.
Great job.
Thank you. And they were kind of like an intermission act, I guess is how you would explain it. They weren't a part of the competition. They were like, I don't want to say the opening act. And the winner of the competition goes on to represent Sweden in the Eurovision Song Contest. So it's like, I guess a pretty big deal.
Yeah, that's how we got ABBA.
Oh my God. Full circle.
ABBA.
I know. There's no right or wrong way. Well, there probably is, but here there is not.
This is a safe space.
Okay. Just to briefly talk about this performance, they did a medley of Mamma Mia,
upside down floor filler and dancing queen. And they all look so freaking good. I loved the camera work. They kind of like backlit them. And then as soon as the beat dropped for Mamma Mia, like lit up their faces. It was just really well done. I believe there was definitely some live singing, or at least singing along with the backtrack. I just was, they had choreo. I was extremely impressed by this performance. I highly recommend you go check it out. I would be shocked if this was the only thing they did, honestly. The work, the effort, how good it looked and was received. I would be appalled if they didn't do more after this, but that's just my opinion. I don't know. Now, I don't know about you, but I am bouncing off the ceiling for our listeners because they're just the best. And while we don't have a review to read for you this week, please leave us a review so we can read it next week. And thank you for your 5-star rating and your kind words.
Yeah.
It means so much.
Yeah. We love you guys. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.